You're listening to Eureka on Monocle 24 with me, Daniel Bache, host of The Entrepreneurs. Patty Cosgrave is the CEO and co-founder of two of the fastest-growing technology conferences in the world, Web Summit, which gets underway in Lisbon this November, and Collision, which moved to its new headquarters in Toronto earlier this year. His company also stages the Rise Tech Expo in Hong Kong. A graduate of Trinity College Dublin, Patty worked in a number of startups before launching the annual Web Summit conference, which has grown steadily since 2014, and has seen Patty listed as one of the most influential people in tech. After a few years in New Orleans, Collision moved north to Toronto, after some intense lobbying from Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. Recently, our Toronto bureau chief, Tomas Lewis, caught up with Patty to hear the story behind the growth of both expos and the challenges in reimagining what a technology conference can be.
We had started in the United States, and for the last 3 years, we were in New Orleans. As the event grew, it became ever more global. New Orleans just had no international flight connectivity, and we also had the unusual phenomenon that we actually, and people may not realize this, have a strong contingent. It's a tech conference of Iranians. Iran has some world-class universities, produces incredible scientists and engineers, many of whom leave and work in great companies around the world. I mean, I could go into long lists of CEOs of tech companies who are actually by origin Iranian. The number of Iranians coming into the United States to our event went from a low number, 50 or 60, to zero over the previous 2 years, largely driven, I think, by a change in sentiment by the fearless leader in the White House. And, you know, the same was true for a number of other countries as well, in particular from the region. And I just didn't feel that was the type of world, certainly, that we wanted to live in. And so all of these were part of the ingredients, along with, you know, lobbying from Justin Trudeau, receiving nice letters and phone calls, is a very powerful and enticing thing. It means, there's a government across the border that are really serious about tech and very serious about hosting people from countries all over the world. And that's what we really want to do. We don't want to create an American or a Canadian tech conference. We want to create a meeting place for people from all countries, all colors, all shades from all over the world to meet in one place to discuss and learn and network about, you know, all of the greatest and best new technologies, and also talk about some of the downsides of technology as well, which we don't shy away from. Nine years ago, when I started with a few of my friends, we'd been to very few business conferences. Those that we'd been to, we found incredibly boring. We'd been to a lot of music festivals in Glastonbury, across the continent, all over Ireland, and we kind of fused the two experiences together, which for some people might be an abrasive or a bit of a wild experience, but that's kind of the spirit of the event, is a little lighter than a traditional kind of formalized business conference. And then secondly, in a sense, it's not really a tech conference. Technology is almost like the invisible hand that exists just across every sector of industry and society. You know, whether we like it or not, it's upending transportation, relationships with friends, how we meet people, how our democracies and our elections are decided. So in a sense, maybe it's not any longer a tech conference. It's just a conference on the stuff that's changing in our society and economies particularly fast, and oftentimes that's just the common denominator, is it's driven by a lot of technology. I grew up on a farm in Ireland, and unusually for, you know, I was born in 1983, but at that point there were already half a dozen computers in my home. My dad was, you know, milked a lot of cows by day, but was obsessed with especially early kind of Apple computers, but also the first PDAs, which were actually manufactured by an incredible British company called Scion, early gaming consoles. And oddly, that was just kind of my world, rural Ireland, lots of computers. It seems obscure, and my passion for technology never really changed. In university, I was trying to work on lots of different ideas to create different pieces of software. It never really went very far. And then eventually, a few years after graduating, I ended up organizing a very small event for really friends who were also kind of entrepreneurs or interested in technology in Dublin. And my instinct was to build software, to use software to create the conference. I mean, you know, for thousands of years, there have been gatherings. Usually those gatherings are convened by connected or powerful people who can corral interesting people to come together as speakers, and then the more people come and hear those great speakers. I kind of thought there was a different approach. There are many ways to hail a taxi or a car, many ways to rent a room. But sometimes infusing software as this kind of almost invisible layer into the process can be quite transformative. And that's been the approach for the last 8 or 9 years. And an obscure group of young, unconnected people from Dublin have built what have become the largest kind of tech conferences, not just in Europe, but now in North America. And I think slowly but surely, people are beginning to go, oh, these guys aren't a big media company. They're not kind of quite old school, very connected people. They're actually just a bunch of software engineers upending an industry that's existed all the way back to the ancient world. I mean, people have been coming together forever. Always room for improvement. Ultimately, when you bring 20,000 or 30 or 50,000 people together, what you're trying to do is make it very efficient for the right people to meet each other. So if you think about dating apps like Tinder, in a way we put into the hands of our attendees a Tinder-like application that hopefully, you know, we call it like engineering serendipity. We're trying to nudge the right people. They could be from Tajikistan or they could be from Silicon Valley. We're just trying to nudge the right people closer together. And at the scale of 50,000 people or 20,000 people or even 1,000 people, you can guarantee there are 5 or 6 people you should really meet that you don't realize. The problem is the cost of finding those people or the probability of bouncing into them is very, very low. Probability is low, cost of finding them is high, and we just tried to change that quite radically. And, it's not perfect, but our approach seems to be working. Normally, I should add, conferences that become truly global take a long time to scale. So some listeners might be familiar with CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas every year in January. It's very famous, but actually what people don't realize, it's more than half a century old. The World Economic Forum in Davos, very, very famous, but again, people may not realize it will be half a century old next year. Cannes Lions, perhaps the most famous marketing and advertising conference in the world, is actually 64 years old this year. So usually these things take a very long time to form. South by Southwest is considered a newbie. It's in its mid-30s. Mobile World Congress, people may not know it, but it's huge and it's the biggest mobile conference in the world. It actually is also in its mid-30s. So Collision is 5 years old, and that's very unusual. But I really think, you know, it's not us driving it as these kids from Ireland. It's software, and that software is a powerful differentiator, and it's upending all industries. And I don't think gatherings of people, be they tech conferences or otherwise, are immune from the powers of and efficiencies that software can bring to it. There are a number of other things that I think are important. A lot of conferences, if you are a paying partner or exhibitor, you get to do a presentation on stage. That's verboten. So we don't allow that. We operate a strict editorial independence internal to the company. There's a kind of a church and state division. So some of our biggest partners don't actually have any presence on stage at all. If they want a presence on stage, they have to achieve that on the basis of merit. That doesn't mean a speaker sometimes doesn't hijack the stage and start overtly pushing their company that bit too much. That can sometimes happen, and that might lead to a kind of blacklisting, and that certainly has happened. But broadly, I think most of the speakers, we keep the content short to kind of 20 minutes, gives people a little kind of high-level insight. We divide our content in two ways. We have a center stage, and that's not really the big stage. That's sort of the Cliff Notes stage. So you'll get an entree into a particular topic, and then we have thematically specific stages. So if you really want to get a little bit deeper on marketing or environmental issues or pick any theme, we have multiple other stages that aren't all that particularly smaller than the center stage. And that's sometimes a bit of an obscure concept for people, that they're like, oh, I'm on the big stage. It's like, well, no, you're not actually on the big stage. You're on the abbreviated stage where you're not going to go particularly deep. And that allows people from cross industries access what you may be doing in autonomous driving. However, we have a stage called Autotech that is specifically focused on autonomous driving. So if you want to go a mile deep, you'll be able to do that on that stage because everybody self-selected for specific interests in the future of autonomous driving. One goal, of course, seems to always, it's not limitless scale. You know, the event is, compared to our main event, which is in Europe called Web Summit, which is 70,000 people at this point, Collision is quite small. It's a little baby with about 25,000 people. So we'd like to grow that. In my mind, growing it allows you to multiply the representation of different industries. And I think when you bring together all these different industries into one place, it creates just this much more interesting platform for debate and discussion. At nighttime, dinners can be speckled with people from all different walks of life, from academics to regulators to big corporate CEOs who are here to CEOs of much faster growing, interesting companies. Longer term, I also think our focus on the, I do call it the kind of negative externalities of all of this new technology. We're not afraid to have those kind of harder conversations. Technology is such an all-pervasive part of our lives and the lives of almost all the people that we interact with. And we can't deny that there are downsides to these newfangled things, from addiction. I have a small child. I can just see the mesmerizing effect of phone screens. We really don't know enough about the consequences on cognitive development or kind of otherwise. And I think we should thread carefully. When cars came along, we recognized cars, you know, as a transformative technology, but there were no markings on roads, there were no traffic lights, no licensing, no safety checks, no seat belts. They were weapons that still to this day kill and maim a lot of people, but we've decided as societies, on balance, this is a transformative technology, but we need to mitigate against the downsides of these things called cars. Therefore, we need rules that will soften the chances or reduce the chances that they will maim and kill. They still maim and kill an enormous amount of people, but we're satisfied that, again, on balance. And I think it's almost the same framework should be applied to a lot of the large platforms that exist today. On balance, is social media a good thing? I think on balance, it is. Does it maim and hurt a lot of people? Yeah, I think absolutely it does. You can't deny that. So are we going to take the approach that we've taken with generations of new technologies like cars that on balance we said, yeah, listen, okay, we can live with this. And I think we're kind of at that point, but we haven't yet figured out what the seatbelt will look like. Do we need some sort of licensing? And what are the other kind of balances and checks? And there was no such thing as a speeding fine. We had to invent that. There was no such thing as a parking ticket. We had to invent that. We're at the early stages of codifying penalties for being a bad driver. What is being a bad social media participant? And can people be fined for it? We figured it out for cars. I think we can figure it out for social media. It almost seems like a simpler problem.
My thanks to Patty Cosgrave for sharing the story of Collision and Web Summit. Thanks as well to Tomas Lewis, our Toronto Bureau Chief, who conducted this interview, and to Maylee Evans and Alex Port-Felix, who mixed and edited this show. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.